there was a lot of editing.
Gotcha.
So just a warning, if you bump that cord much, it will in the recording. Not a big deal for you, but
I'll try not to.
Let you know. Yeah, I also don't want you to be still.
I'll try to sit perfectly still. Yeah, for the next hour and a half.
Yeah. just don't lounge. If you do, you know, lounge in that direction.
You can lounge.
So yeah.
Just I figure letting them know it's good.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this.
You ready?
I'm ready. Cool, you ready?
Sure. Are you starting or am I starting?
You're starting. You got to read them as right.
Oh, it's true. That's true. Welcome.
Thank you.
We just wanted you to know that, you know, you have the right not to answer any question you choose.
Fair.
And should you need a lawyer, we figure you know lots of good ones because we're too poor to appoint one for you. Welcome to How I See It with me, Mark Pratt, and
Justin Sternberg. This is a podcast that works to counter cultural polarization through thoughtful conversations.
Hey, Justin.
Hey, Mark.
I just recognized we just had a good conversation.
We did.
Yes.
We did.
We had Judge Jason Disbro in.
Judge, what's his full title again? It's this big, long, fancy.
It's a district court number 13.
North Carolina.
There you go.
I can't. You do it, Marcus.
It's North Carolina Senior Resident Superior Court Judge Jason Disbro.
Man, that's a mouthful.
It is.
But I think he deserves that title fully.
Yes. And we had a good conversation in a how I see it fashion.
Yeah.
And I think as we were able to talk about law and other things, it was just you understand where someone is coming from,
yeah,
even when their views might be a little different than yours.
Yeah. What I love about it, too, is like you think of, I mean, think about the show Judge Judy or whatever.
Oh, sure.
It's like, you get this harsh, strong exterior, whatever. And some of my favorite parts of shows are when the lawyers go confer.
Sure.
With the judge, and you like get an insight into the person of that judge and
yes,
who they are, and like, oh, they tick like this, right?
You know? Yeah.
And I think that was my favorite thing about talking with Mr. Judge Jason Disbro is
yeah,
just being able to like hear the person behind that strong exterior up on
yes,
the bench and seeing like the heart behind it, and he is a man with a lot of heart, and that I really appreciated that.
No
so,
doubt. And yeah, I think I can appreciate that opportunity that we not gave, but you know, to
yeah,
have
yeah,
to be able for him to demonstrate that
yeah,
yes, it's not about, you know, the image, but it's about the passion that he has for
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
And that he genuinely
yeah,
cares about the
yeah,
people he serves in district. There was a district with that.
It was a district. We lost
district
it.
13B. There
13B.
We go.
13B. Yep.
In District 13B.
The North Carolina 2nd Superior Court Division.
and so, yes, that may be a title
yeah,
that he has, but yet this podcast, which will get divided into two segments,
yep,
will just give you a great little opportunity to see a side of Judge Disbro
yeah,
that you might not
yeah,
have otherwise.
And I like to think that you get a chance to see a side of that courtroom, right? Like
sure,
from behind the bench. And I know he's a unique individual and every judge is going to be different, but it is cool to have a conversation with someone from that view.
No doubt.
And I know that there are going to be judges with vastly different opinions about things or whatever, but it's just, yeah, I really did appreciate that. And I specifically appreciate Judge Jason Disbro.
Sure.
Because he's a good friend of ours, and it was a good opportunity to get to know that side of him, because we know him from things like F3, working out together.
Sure.
And kind of more casual atmospheres. And so it was great to
no
have
doubt,
that conversation with him. So,
so
I hope you guys
is...
enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think you will. I know we did.
And this is how we see it. And should you need a lawyer, We figure you know lots of good ones because we're too poor to appoint one for you.
So, I've got a few old speed dial.
There you go. So just by all means, know that we're glad to have you and want to extend a little humor in that process of the legal realm as we think about.
Since we know so much about it.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that was what the Amanda writes. You just read.
Amanda,
is that
yes.
right? Amanda,
it's Murray. It's close enough. Murray, yeah. Close enough. Yeah,
we don't
want to. We both
thought it was Belinda. Belinda's going to start shaking. You know, it's like, wow, these guys know nothing.
Well, that's true. So this is North Carolina senior resident Superior Court Judge Jason Disbrow. Mm. Now I need to take a breath. And there's some other things I read on. Did you know there's a thing called Ballotpedia?
Yes, I am aware of okay. Ballotpedia. I don't know if I've ever actually looked at it.
I have no idea if it's accurate, but there are some other words on there.
If it's on the internet, it's probably
right.
true.
It's got to be
yeah,
true, yeah.
Probably.
It said District 13B of the North Carolina 2nd Superior Court Division. Is that previous role or is that current?
No, so I'm Judicial District 13B, and the superior courts are broken into divisions, and I am Division 2. There's about 14 counties in our division. So when we rotate out for every 6 months, they try to keep you within your division. So you're assigned to one of those counties or group of counties. So for instance, right now I'm assigned home in Brunswick. Beginning July 1st, I'm assigned to Craven County, Pamlico County, and Carteret County for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Does that mean, so, yeah, 6 months means you probably wouldn't move there? Or
no,
yeah.
So...
I don't know where
Yeah, I'll stay. I'll stay in a hotel during the week when I'm up there. But it's a bit of a... of a misnomer. You're not actually assigned there for the entire 6 months. As a senior resident, you're always home your first full week.
Okay.
Because that's when we have what's called case management in Brunswick County, where I'll sit with the lawyers, I'll have conferences with them over their cases, try to help the parties come to some type of plea arrangement. And then I also preside over treatment courts that we have in Brunswick County. And that's the first and third Tuesday and the first and third Thursday. So it assures me that I'm going to be there at least once a month. Okay. And then there's other times where maybe court breaks down in those counties where you're assigned and you're assigned somewhere else from the administrative office of the courts. They'll either assign me back home or they'll assign me to another county, even though I'm officially assigned to those three counties over the next 6 months.
So when you say court breaks down, what does that mean exactly?
Could be a lot of reasons, but as an example...
The judge just loses his temper. The jury's like, I've had enough!
No, it's usually not... That's usually not the reason, but...
That's TV, Justin. That's not real life.
I mean, he said that it breaks down. I don't know what that means. I'm just...
So the best example when courts break down are when you have a civil session. So, superior courts have jurisdiction over any civil case more than $25,000 that's in controversy. Okay. So, let's say a big contract case is filed in superior court. That case comes on for trial. It's scheduled for trial months ahead of time, and lo and behold, Monday morning as they come into the courthouse, they announce, "Judge, we've settled the case."
Cool.
Now your civil session very likely has broken down because the cases that are on the calendar behind it have either settled, several have been continued, or you know those lawyers aren't ready for trial because they were 11th on the trial calendar and they just didn't think that they were going to have a trial.
Sure.
So what do you do? You call Raleigh, you email them, say, "Hey, my civil session's broken down. You guys want to send me somewhere?" Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, gotcha. Which gives you some administrative time in your office. Mm. Now, to brag on our county a little bit, if that happens in Brunswick County, you don't really have a problem. Because remember, when you have a session, you also have a jury that comes in.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So in Brunswick County, I implemented some rules when I was appointed to this job that if a civil session breaks down, we have a what's called a 2 o'clock calendar call on Mondays anytime there's a civil session, where criminal calendar is called. So if your civil session's broken down, that's okay. You've got 15 to 20 criminal cases that are ready for trial, and you utilize the jury for that.
You can just use that same jury. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, wow.
Because you've summoned them for that week. It's a mixed session, of course, is what it's called, mixed session. And you roll on with your jury trial, and you don't have downtime. And I just think that's an efficient way to utilize the court time that you have.
So as we're talking about this very legal entity, what are some of the common misconceptions that people have about your role? In other words, they see you in this position with this job, and it's like they've seen Law and Order. They've seen you understand that's what they think of in that aspect of law. How you see it? What are the misconceptions?
That it's a good question. There's probably a lot of misconceptions. It's funny you said Law and Order, because one of the jury instructions that we give at the beginning of a jury trial is just that. This is, we tell the jurors, this is probably not going to be like you think it's going to be.
Sure. Yeah.
That
it's going to be boring.
You're going to think that this case is filled with high drama.
Mm-hmm.
Most cases are not filled with high drama. And
sure.
What Justin just said is true. A lot of cases can be very boring and tedious at times.
And that's why they pay you your $11 or whatever.
That's exactly right. So the process of justice is tedious.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's time consuming. I think to the outsider, it appears inefficient, and maybe at times it is. There's no question that it could probably be more efficient.
Sure.
For instance, jury selection, which you don't see on television and you generally don't read about in books, is very tedious.
Mm.
Rather boring. Sure. It's the same questions asked over and over and over to 12 people in the box.
Mm-hmm.
And then don't forget, some of those people are excused.
Sure.
Now we've replaced them with three or four more people with the same questions.
Sure.
It's not unusual for jury selection to take 1, 2, 3 days, sometimes weeks, depending on the type of case that you have. And holding people's attention can really be a challenge. So I think that's one misconception that people would have with the court system. The other misconception is, 95% of criminal cases do not go to trial.
Sure. Okay.
So a lot of people just think, I go to work on Monday and we have jury trials all week. Well, depending on the week.
Right.
I'm in a jury trial now. That's carried over from last week, and we're still going this week. But at least half of my time is spent taking pleas.
Okay.
And that's also somewhat monotonous.
When you say taking pleas, you're actually considering whether that case will come before you in a court, and or help me understand that
part.
Okay. Yeah. Assume we don't know.
All right. So the process of taking a plea for a judge, the district attorney and the defense attorney will sit down together, either with the judge, a lot of times outside of the judge's presence, because a judge's presence is not required to negotiate a plea.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example. Let's say that the defendant is charged with felony breaking and entering and felony larceny. A typical case in Brunswick County would be a beach house is broken into.
Okay.
Let's say, for example, that defendant doesn't have any prior criminal record.
Mm.
Most times the district attorney would offer some type of plea to that defendant's attorney for a probationary sentence. So what that means is it's a felony larceny, is a class H felony. There's class A through class I. It's a lower end felony.
Gotcha.
in case you want, you know, you're considering
it's pretty low, Mark. Yes, yes, try to stick to the ages and eyes if possible.
Ages and eyes, yes. Okay.
Free advice.
Is there in Ballotpedia, do they show you where the
they
where
don't. Those letters not, are? That, is, oh, that is not on Ballotpedia.
Right. I'll just text you next time.
You're going to have to look elsewhere, maybe the statutes, the general statutes. But typical sentence would be 5 months minimum to 15 months maximum. That sentence is suspended and the defendant is placed on supervised probation for 18 months. That plea offer is made from the district attorney's office to defense counsel. If there's a lot of evidence that points to the defendant committing that crime, it's likely that that plea offer is accepted.
Sure.
And it's called a transcript of plea is filled out. It's a form that's 2 pages front and back.
Sure.
Ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
That's where the judge comes in. So the prosecutor and the defendant and the defense counsel come into court. Prosecutor asks, arraigns the defendant, how do you plead to one count of felony larceny and breaking it, or it may not even be breaking and entering now. Maybe they've dismissed that case pursuant to this plea. Defendant pleads guilty. And then I go through that transcript of plea that I just described to you guys with the defendant. It's on the record.
Sure.
Everything is recorded in Superior Court. It's called a court of record. And then I place the defendant on probation pursuant to that plea arrangement. Right. Now, I have the right, as does any judge, the presiding judge, to decline to take the plea.
To intervene, if you will.
Yes, I can intervene and say, you know, I don't think this is a fair, an appropriate plea, either for the state of North Carolina or maybe for the defendant, and I'm not going to take this plea. I'm going to continue it and allow you to put it in front of another judge.
Yeah.
Because it's a negotiated plea. And my philosophy on that is I'm not going to punish the state or punish the defendant because I'm not comfortable taking it. This is what the state of North Carolina has offered. This is what the defendant has agreed to do pursuant to that offer. So I want to give them an opportunity to put it in front of another judge. That only happens, that's a rare occasion when that happens. It's happened a few times for me where I'm just not comfortable taking it.
What makes that decision for you? Based on how you see it.
There are times where I think it's probably more the sex cases.
Okay.
Where I just feel that it's not an appropriate disposition. An appropriate outcome. The times where I have declined to enter the plea are when I personally felt that the defendant wasn't getting enough punishment.
Okay. Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't know the intricacies of the plea. Many times when they're brought before me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get a snippet of the factual evidence.
Yeah.
That's all you get in the plea. And
which could breed some of the discomfort. Like, I don't know.
Correct.
Yeah, with the information I have, if I'm comfortable saying this is good enough, right? Is that you're saying?
That is correct. That is correct. Yeah. That we're just from my own... From my own perspective, there's just, I think it's happened 2 or 3 times since I've been a judge, period, where I've just said, I'm not comfortable taking this plea. I'd rather somebody else take this plea.
And when you decline it, it doesn't go to you, is what you're
saying,
is what I'm understanding.
That's correct. Okay. So remember, every 6 months, there's a new judge that comes through Brunswick County. So I would just simply carry it over.
Gotcha.
To a time when there's another judge. There's other times too, even when I'm assigned, where I have a conflict. It's called a conflict week, where I'm assigned somewhere else. As an example, you know, a police chief is charged. Well, you know, I may know that police chief personally. Sure. And sure. if that police chief is going to take a plea that week or have a trial that week, I'm not going to be involved in that case.
Yeah.
So they assign me somewhere else. They bring in another judge. So that'd be a time where I would continue that case to that week.
Sure. So there are other people that you can are continuing. How many other judges are in that position that rotate through?
So like, to be clear, I can be assigned anywhere in the state of North Carolina. And okay. I've been assigned to Johnston County, Robeson County, Onslow County, Craven County, Columbus County, Bladen County. There's 100 Superior Court judges in the state.
Yeah.
I think it's 95 elected and then 5 appointed, which are called special Superior Court judges, who are appointed by the governor.
Sure.
And they're varied. Those 5 are at various parts of the states. The rest of us are elected out of our county or our district of counties, for lack of a better phrase. You know, for instance, you Pamlico, Craven, and Carteret are all one district.
Nice. I gotcha.
Brunswick County is its own district.
Based on population?
Yeah, correct. I was just getting ready to say, most of it's just based on population. If you have a district that's comprised of 2 or 3 counties, you're most likely going to have more than one Superior Court judge as well. We only have one Superior Court judge in Brunswick. They only have one in Bladen and Columbus.
That's because you're so good? Or
exactly. No, I don't think it's because I'm so good. I think it has more to do with our population.
I'm just going to assume it's because you're
that good. Exactly.
If you could put that on Ballotpedia, that'd be good. Just add it.
Let me go edit it right now. That's awesome. So there's not a lot of crossover in what I do with what you do. Except for I do know your website's down.
Is it down?
Okay. I would give the URL. You know, I'd say, go check out. But no.
Yeah, I utilize that really for my campaign purposes.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think I just made a choice. Maybe I won't pay for it for a couple of years. My term is an 8-year term. So I don't think I have a lot of traffic on that website right now. Yeah. But I'll keep that in mind.
You are about to have like at least, what, 8 visitors?
8 visitors,
Yeah. Maybe I better get it back up.
But no, speaking of that, at the same time, we recognize, you know, there's the law. When we think of the law, there is how I see it. You know,
sure.
Sometimes I think of when I'm looking in my rearview mirror going down the road in blue lights, that's the law.
Sure.
You follow me?
Yeah.
And when someone breaks into my beach house, I want the law. I want justice. And so I'm recognizing the law itself, that word. There's a lot of polarization with that.
There is.
Especially depending on potentially your upbringing or your particular history with certain habits or even family, right? Like your perspective on law can be so vastly different as, you know, in some cases justice in the righteous right hand, and in other cases the oppressor or, you know, or the inefficient, you know, system that keeps you down or whatever, right? Like there's so many... Yeah. So what's the question?
So as Justin clarified, what makes the law so polarizing as far as you're concerned?
Yes.
I think like so many other topics, what makes the law so polarizing is ignorance.
Okay. How so?
Like the ignorance we've displayed.
I was going to say, as if Justin and I haven't demonstrated it.
Let me clarify that word a little bit. You know, ignorance is not
stupid.
It's not a disparaging word.
Right.
Sure.
I'm ignorant to most things that relate to medicine. I'm ignorant to most things that are scientific. That those are things that I wasn't interested in school.
Sure.
I obviously have no expertise in medicine or science. My quote-unquote expertise lies in the law. But particularly in our society now with social media, everybody seems to be an expert.
Okay.
In
every subject.
In every subject. Sure. Right? I mean, I think we can all say that we've seen that if you're on Facebook or Twitter or whatever social media you use. And I, there's just some of the comments that I see made just shows a general lack of understanding. As an example, I have friends who don't understand why when an individual is arrested, why they get a bond. Why are they out? Why are they out of jail? I don't understand that. They broke into somebody's house. Well, you know, the Constitution requires bail.
Gotcha.
Our law requires a reasonable bail.
Sure.
And now we can have discussions about what's reasonable and what's not reasonable, but you know, having a discussion about why somebody's out of jail to me portrays an ignorance of what's a fairly straightforward constitutional provision and statutory provisions in the state of North Carolina and most states, to where an individual is arrested, they are charged, but they are presumed innocent of that crime, and
that's where the bond comes in.
Where a bond comes in.
Sure.
And the purpose of a bond is to ensure the defendant's appearance in court.
Okay.
And ensure the safety of the community.
Sure.
Can you break down a bond and bail, those two words?
So essentially the same thing. Some people use the term bail, some people use the term bond. But there's lots of options for bail, bond in North Carolina. A written promise to appear is one of them.
Sure.
They just sign that says, I promise I'll come to court. An unsecured bond, which is very similar to a written promise to appear, $20,000 unsecured. You don't have to put up any money at all. You get a court date. GPS monitoring is another type of
ankle
bond.
Bracelets.
Yeah, ankle bracelets, where for more serious offenses, maybe
we need to know where you're at.
Correct. Maybe you have a victim of a crime, an assault on a female, or a attempted murder, things like that. You might put somebody on GPS monitoring as well as a secured bond. And a secured bond is just that. Either you put up, let's say it's $100,000 secured bond. You put up a deed of trust for $100,000 of property you own, or you get a bail bondsman.
Sure.
You pay them 10 or 15% that you never get that money back, by the way. And the bondsman is then securing your appearance for court. And then additionally, there may be GPS monitoring. The only cases in North Carolina that you're not required to give a bond is for capital murder.
Okay.
You know, first degree murder. That's the only case where a judge has the authority to say no bond.
Right.
Every other case requires a bond. Depending on the severity of the crime, obviously, that plays a significant role in the kind of bond and the amount of monetary bond. You know, you have a drug trafficker, there's a decent chance they're going to get a significant bond, depending on their record, because you may be concerned, A, that they're going to come to court, and B, it's a public safety issue when someone is out trafficking drugs in our community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So bond is really almost an insurance policy to say this person is going to come.
It's a good way to look at it.
You're paying this amount to have protection for the people that have been offended and for the court to say this person will be back.
Correct.
And in the event you lose all the money you've been given and we're going to come find you again.
That is correct.
Okay.
And that is correct.
the alternative is you stay in jail, right?
That's correct.
We hold you until you. That's how we guarantee you show up, right?
Exactly. And what happens is, you know, for these low-level crimes that I just talked about earlier, H&I felonies, misdemeanors, there's somewhat of an epidemic in our country that poor people suffer the consequences of that, right?
Okay.
So, you know, most crimes committed are not these serious felony crimes.
Sure.
Of you know, murders and rapes. Mm-hmm. That's a small percentage of crimes committed. Most crimes committed are misdemeanors.
Sure.
Simple assaults.
That's not what I read on Twitter. DWIs.
I'm sorry?
That's not what I read on Twitter.
Yeah, correct. and, you know, these low-level crimes, H&I felonies, A1, 1, 2, and 3 misdemeanors. That's what you have. Class A1, Class 1, Class 2, and Class 3. You only have 4 class of misdemeanors in North Carolina.
Which are the good ones?
None of them are good
okay,
ones.
Okay, so avoid the misdemeanors.
Correct. Yeah. But what you have is you'll have folks who are charged with these low-level crimes where they either can't get prison time or jail time or they can only get a very small amount of time. And then these people will get stuck in jail for pretrial release on even a $2,000 bond because they don't have the means to make it.
Yeah,
they may sit in jail 60, 90 days, and their maximum sentence is 30 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you see, how I see it, that's not remotely justice.
Mm. No doubt. I hear you.
Yeah.
So there's been a rethinking, if you will, of the bond process to ensure that folks aren't punished from a pretrial standpoint based on their poverty, based on their inability to make a bond, again, for a case that they can't get serious jail time or prison time for. Now, that doesn't change the bonds for the serious offenders. For individuals we need to be concerned about, you know, I'm concerned for your family, my family, our community. So we're trying to educate as judges what the purpose of bond is, the purpose of pretrial release, and remind folks that innocent until proven guilty. And in my line of work, that does happen. There are innocent people who are charged. You know, it's not a majority of people.
What percentage would you say if you just had to throw a number at it?
It's such a hard question to answer. I don't know.
Enough that it's good we do it that way.
Yes. Enough that there are checks and balances. Don't forget, we're a state that... I'll give you an example.
Sure.
I could go to the magistrate right now, swear, put my hand on the Bible, raise my right hand, swear that Mark Pratt assaulted me during the making of this podcast.
Gotcha.
Mark wouldn't do that. For any future guests, carry on.
But yes, I appreciate the example.
But I could go take that warrant out and potentially maybe Mark would get a secure bond. You know, maybe I've got a mark on my face that I got yesterday evening building something at my house. I'm not very handy. Maybe I hit my face with a hammer and I left a mark. And I might be able to get a magistrate to believe my story and issue a warrant for Mark's arrest.
Gotcha.
So now we've got a he said, he said.
Yep.
Mark, and in this example, let's say Mark doesn't have any money and he goes to jail. And it's a $500 secured bond, which means $75 to a bail bondsman for them to secure your appearance. Mark doesn't have it. So Mark may sit in jail for a day or two before he gets in front of a district court judge. Now, that district court judge may modify Mark's bond and unsecure it.
Sure.
But maybe the district court judge doesn't. Maybe the district court judge believes, because remember, you've got we all have different perspectives. Mm-hmm. We all have different how Pratt, I see it. Mark's
a bearded guy, and you know,
Mark Pratt's a bearded guy, and Mark came in. Mark's mad because he just sat in jail for 48 hours. He's kind of got a little bit of an attitude.
Quite possibly.
He's got a little bit of an attitude, and the judge that's there that day doesn't like his attitude, so he doesn't modify the bond. And he gives Mark a new court date that's 25 days from today. Mark can't ever make bond. He finally comes into court, and the judge who's there that day hears the evidence and says, man, this is hogwash, and dismisses the case. Now, Mark sat in jail for 25 days.
It's the attitude, Mark.
It's your attitude.
Check the attitude.
So, you know, I'm giving you an example. Yeah, but it's fascinating. But it's, these are things that do happen.
Yeah,
sure.
Particularly in these he said, she said cases.
Especially he said, she said.
Those happen very, very often.
In couples dynamics. Right. That's, you know.
Correct.
Yeah.
You got custody situation, somebody trying to gain an advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's less likely to happen when law enforcement's involved. Mm-hmm. They've investigated the case.
Sure.
They've talked to witnesses, and an indictment has happened in Superior Court. So it's less likely to happen in my realm than it is in the district court realm where I used to preside. Mm-hmm. Those types of things happen every day.
Yeah.
Where individuals come off the street, swear out a warrant. Now, to be fair, a lot of magistrates will just issue what's called a criminal summons now, where you're not arrested. The sheriff just brings it to you, and you have to come to court. You're summoned to court.
Sure.
For that.
Yeah.
Instead of the process of being arrested and the process of receiving bonds.
So speaking to that process, as you just mentioned, where you know, you were in district and now you're superior. That's superior. That's a good word. I like that word. You know, I should put that superior. In some label. But that's
what I said. That's fine. But
what changes have you seen? I mean, even from your early days as a lawyer, you know, attorney, that kind of thing. Is there a difference?
No, between lawyer and attorney. Yeah, okay. No,
I didn't want to offend you by using one or the other. I figured they were interchangeable.
What about ambulance chaser?
That's a little different.
That wasn't a label I was using. But either way, what changes have you seen in that amount of time in that aspect of law? And because I'm respecting this fact that you desire to implement change with your position, and so therefore, you know, you've seen that change, and typically that desire for change means this isn't as good as it could be.
How he sees it.
Yeah, it's how I see it.
Yes. Jason as well.
Yeah.
So I think first off, the change in laws should come from your legislature, not the judiciary. Okay? I want you guys to understand that. So the changes that I have seen are legislative changes.
It's not people at your level making these changes.
Well, it's not supposed to be people
at
this level making these changes. Unfortunately, I do believe that there are judges who create laws.
Sure.
That is not the role. How I see it, that is not my role.
Gotcha.
My role is to support, maintain, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of North Carolina. That's the oath that every judge takes.
Sure. From the Supreme Court right on
all the way down. That's the oath that we take in North Carolina as judges. So it is not my role to, well, you know what? I don't like this law, so I'm going to create a new law. My role is to support, maintain, and defend the laws that are
passed
implemented by our legislature. What I have seen from our legislature is really similar to what I'm talking about. Now, we as judges, we implement bond policies based on the law.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
But again, it's that can vary from judge to judge, from district to district. As the senior resident Superior Court judge, I have, pursuant to the law, have to devise a bond policy, a bail policy for our district court judges and our magistrates. So I implement that based on how I see it. And it's what I just described to you. You know, these lower level crimes, we don't need to be keeping these people in jail awaiting trial. And again, it goes to the justice of it, but it also from a fiscal policy, I consider myself a very strong fiscal conservative. I don't think taxpayers should be paying for Mark Pratt to be sitting in jail for 25 days
for his attitude
on it. Correct. On a misdemeanor case that he's not going to jail for in the first place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, fiscal reasons for that as well. But what I've seen change over the course of my practice is a reduction in the sentence of some of these lower level crimes. For instance, driving while license revoked.
Okay.
Used to be a class one misdemeanor.
Gotcha.
You can get 120 days for a class one misdemeanor. Mm. 4 months is a lot of time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No doubt.
Now there are two levels of driving while license revoked, which okay. I think is a good thing. The legislature sure. implemented that years ago, 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. One driving while license revoked, the one type, the higher level, is you're driving while your license is revoked pursuant mm-hmm. to an impaired driving revocation.
Okay. So you've had your license taken away.
You've had
away
your license revoked because you were driving while you were impaired.
Sure.
You were convicted of that, and your license was revoked pursuant to that. All right, so that's a level, that's a sure. class one misdemeanor. The other driving while license revoked is a class three misdemeanor. It's your lowest level misdemeanor.
Gotcha.
And the reason that is a class three is because your license is revoked because you didn't pay a court fine.
Sped too many times.
Because you had too many speeding
tickets. That happened to me.
Yes, correct.
I lost my
correct.
License when I was like 18 or 19. Yeah. Then I got pulled over. After oh boy,
yeah, right. But you see the level
talk
of
about
difference.
Justin now.
But you see the difference, right?
Yeah.
There didn't used to be a difference.
Gotcha.
But our yeah. legislature, in their wisdom, and I personally think it's a good law. I don't think all laws are good, but I think this is a good one where we have differentiated.
Sure.
The punishment. The first off, the level of misdemeanor, and we've differentiated the punishment because the most time you can get for a class three misdemeanor is 20 days.
Hey, thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like How I See It, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us, and or talk nicely about us on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is us@howiseeit.click. Yep, I said .click, as in .click. Please tell your friends about this show, and we'll see you on the next one.